101.9.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today.
Yeah. Time now for the Empowerment Hour here on Praise 107.9, presented by the Jacksonville Urban League and First Thursday Jacksonville. And now, here's your host, Dr. Richard Danford of the Jacksonville Urban League and Larry Williams of First Thursday Jacksonville.
Okay, good morning, Duval. This is Richard here in the studio this morning, and my illustrious guest, host, that is, my co-host, Larry Williams, is in Seattle, continuing his well-earned time out there at home. And Jarman is visiting in Birmingham, and they're doing great. What's going on, guys?
Hey, hey Doc. Hey, happy Saturday, and good morning, Duval.
Hey, yes, hey, good morning, Jacksonville.
Things are well, and out here in the Pacific Northwest, is we're in a heat wave, so it hasn't rained in, 30 days, and it hasn't, the temperature's been up in the 90s. So, I thought I was, woke up yesterday, I thought I was in Jacksonville, but hey, everything is all well.
Wait, you need to wake up. Yeah, this is, guys, this is Praise 107.9 FM, and Larry, we're over 2 years now on the station. Let's give ourselves a hand. Yeah. We're still
yes,
here.
Yes, sir. We're still kicking.
We're still kicking, and we have a guest this morning.
Okay.
Yeah, City Councilman Terrence Freeman. And you may not be aware of Terrence, but he's the newly appointed city councilman for District 10. The governor appointed him, and there's been quite a bit of talk in terms of his appointment, and of course Jacoby was appointed to the other position, but I think they've zeroed in on this young man, maybe because he's a Republican that is representing a predominantly Democratic area, at least for many, many years. And of course, the public is very concerned about it, at least many people from that district, because, as I said, historically, it has gone to a Democrat. And, as we celebrate and as we move forward in terms of the 50th anniversary of the consolidation here in the city, what happened is that they decided to come up with 19 council people, four of them, Terrence, I believe, at large council member, five. So we have five council people. And then we have council members that represent individual districts. And so certainly there's been a concern for many that even with that, there's not enough, minority representation on the council. But that's another subject. But good morning, Terrence.
Hey, good morning, Doc. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for the invite.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And I wanted to start off. We're going to have you on here the first two segments. And for those who are calling, who are listening with us right now, the number to call in is 296-2251, 296-2251, if you have a question for Terrence. But Terrence, tell us what are your thoughts. Tell us, who are you, by the way?
Yes.
I mean, I know who you are personally, but just give the audience a little about yourself.
Yes, sir. And you've done a great job of kind of depicting the narrative that's been placed out there regarding the appointment. And I've been out in the community and definitely have spoken, met with over 300 folks now personally within the last 2 weeks. And I get it. The process is just not something that that they appreciate. But what I've also learned is that the person that's standing before them, named Terrence Freeman, is someone who they are now, after hearing my concerns and my willingness to listen and my desire to serve, they're willing to partner with me. And so when people say, "Well, who are you, Terrence?" Well, I start simply by saying I'm a son of a Baptist preacher. My father was a pastor of a small country church in Plant City, Florida. And I spent many days a week, either in prayer meetings, choir rehearsal, Bible studies, you know, intercessory prayer, you name it. That was my life. My mother was a social worker until she retired, 30 plus years. And she worked for Family Services in Tampa, Florida. And my brother started preaching when he was 12 and he was ordained at 15. And so I tell people that servanthood, that's all I know. It's a part of my DNA. And so that's the foundation of who I am. I was fortunate enough to, after graduating from high school, I was planning on going to FAMU and I was going to be a doctor. And I joke with people and they say, "Why did you want to be a doctor?" I said, "Well, the best show on TV came on every Thursday night called The Cosby Show. And you had one was an attorney, one was a doctor. And that house looked big. The refrigerator always had food in it. And the kids were always well-dressed." And I said, "I want to be rich."
And it was air conditioned.
Yeah, absolutely. So I said, "I'm going to be a doctor." But God had different plans for me, and baseball came along.
Okay.
And I got drafted, and I can go more into that later.
Oh, you played baseball?
I played professional baseball for 6 years, and it was the first time I got to see much of our country. I mean, Larry, I was out playing in Medford, Oregon, and Yakima, and all of those places in the Northwest, and been in Arizona.
Well, I'm sorry, man, that you had to go to those places.
But I got exposed as a young black kid.
There you go.
As a young black kid that didn't really see more than Tallahassee, the south side of Tallahassee growing up, Marianna, Madison, and then in Brandon, which was outside of Tampa, I got exposed to life. And so when I got injured and retired, and I kept a promise to my mom and went back to school to get my degree, I could have gotten into anything. But I chose just education because I wanted to serve. And I was a teacher in the classroom at a school on the west side for 12 years. Earned my master's degree, went on to be an athletic director, continued working and started working on my doctorate and didn't complete it after the birth of my third daughter. Went on to be a principal. But, you know, I'm proud husband to my beautiful wife, my bride. And we have four daughters, ages 10, 8, 6, and 4. So life is coming at me pretty fast these days.
That's awesome. Hey, Terrence, tell us a little bit about what your plans are and what you've seen, observed so far in your town hall meetings regarding District 10.
Well, I'll tell you this. My plans got expedited. I was initially, upon getting sworn in, was going to take some time to really try to get out, get it with the city departments, and just get caught up to date. We all understood that for the last several weeks, there hadn't been any representation in the seat. And so that the district was without someone sitting at the table to fight for dollars and to fight for them. So my goal was to try to catch up quick as I could on what has happened in that lapse. But as Dr. Danford mentioned in the beginning, a lot of people started hearing about me and learning about me from one perspective and one narrative. And that's fine. I get that. So it was important for me to get out and hold a town hall meeting. And so I was sworn in on the 12th. 7 days later, I was standing in front of the people, which they say is the shortest turnaround of any council member from being elected or appointed to getting in front of their constituents. And I was at the Legend Center. There were 180 folks that showed up. There were many cameras in the room. And that room was filled with energy. It was filled with passion. And it was filled with residents that had some genuine concerns, some of which Doc mentioned with my political affiliation, others with, you know, the issues that have kind of arisen in this situation. But at the end of that meeting, what I left there with was understanding that this is a community that loves its community. It loves it. It loves people, and they want things done. And I feel like I'm going to be that guy that will help continue to get these things done and maybe get them done a little quicker now, given that I have 10 months to get this stuff done.
Okay, Terrence, I had a question for you. Now, in speaking with the residents, are there any specific changes that the residents are hoping for? Like, do you see any trends in what the residents are relaying to you as far as what their concerns are and changes that they're looking for in their district?
Well, the needs are the same. We need our ditches to be well kept and maintained so that they can flow at capacity. We need our sidewalks to be clear so our kids don't have to exit the sidewalk, walk in a main thoroughfare road, risking harm just to get to school. I mean, those were the immediate ones. But I've
what about the ticketing, walking across the
street? So meeting with Public Works, we're identifying areas where we can put crosswalks. And,
okay.
And we've already found two or three. And I asked the residents, give me more. The city wants more. And there's a resident that was telling me that she's been in the district for 33 years and you haven't. And I said, well, ma'am, you're right. But if you're willing to meet with me, I can get your 33 years worth of concerns, mm-hmm. and we can take them back. And we are now getting ready to identify other areas with crosswalks. So the partnership is really starting to form, and I'm excited.
Okay, we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll hear more from Terrence in a little bit. This is Praise 107.9. Good morning, ladies. Did You Know by the Whispers. This is Richard over here at Praise 107.9. 7.9 in the studio with City Councilman Terrence Freeman and my co-hosts, Larry Williams out in Seattle and Jamin up over in Birmingham. They are calling in. So we were talking. We have a call on there, I believe. Chris, we have a Chris on the call. Chris, good morning.
Good morning. So, you know, I just want to, first off, Terrence, Councilman Terrence, congratulations on your appointment. What I don't want to happen is I don't want things to kind of be overshadowed and made it seem as if the only reservation is because he's a African-American Republican, because I don't think that that is the biggest issue. When I look at the situation, I don't look at that being the issue. I think the reason anything even started was due to residency. And so, you know, we've kind of hit everything else, but nobody has yet to say, hey, the residency was the biggest issue that came up. And so I believe just doing the research that's needed, I think that this gentleman can do an amazing job. And I think that we have to remember that success is not a destination, it's a journey. But we also need to kind of be respectful enough to know that when a valid point of residency is brought up, you know, we address it. We've done what we need to do to address it. And so let's move forward for the district. I don't think that we need to kind of make it seem as if the only issue is that it's
right
because he's an African-American Republican.
Right. No, there are many issues. Terrence, you want to can you respond? I know there are some legal things with the challenge and all, and there are certain things that we cannot say over the air, but do you have a comment? How can you respond to that?
Well, in the comment I make in meetings with residents face-to-face is that I do reside in the district.
Right.
And so that's the reality of the situation. Hasn't always been the narrative that's been placed out there. And so, but because it is pending legally, I am limited to only say that I've met all the residency requirements, and I do reside in the district, me and my family.
Great. Okay, thank you, Chris, for calling in. We appreciate that. Larry, did you have something out there in California?
Well, no, I want to talk about, I want to continue talking about Jacksonville and District 10, and you know, I missed the opportunity earlier, but I do want to also congratulate Terrence on his appointment, and I too feel that you know, he has the capabilities of doing an outstanding job for those folks in that district. And as always, Doc, you know how I feel about that district. And Terrence, what about the septic tanks?
And that's, you know, one of the top priorities for me is with infrastructure, and that septic phase out, as I'm learning, is one of the biggest issues and concerns in the district with folks. And so I've done my best to get out and start trying to, one, figure out where we're at in the process. Right now we've funded three projects, and one of them is in District 10, and it actually was the highest rated project to be completed, and that's at Biltmore C. And so
right.
it's fully funded, and I'm pushing hard right now to get more septic phase out completed. And hopefully over the next couple of weeks, I'll be in a position to where I can really go back to the community with where we're at in that septic phase out conversation. But right now, I'm just gathering that information, and Biltmore C is in line to be done and started.
Well, I know that the infrastructure issue has always been a problem since even before consolidation, which speaks to how funds may be dedicated to a certain district, but they end up being utilized in other areas. And of course, needs change. Well, priorities change. Needs don't necessarily change, but priorities
Correct.
Change. And we know that Terrence is on board. We want to look at how we deal with the disparities that exist, not only in infrastructure, but we're, you know, what about the disparities as it relates to city contracting? And I understand now that there's going to be some competition between city government and the Jacksonville Transportation Authority in terms of federal contracts. So we're constantly being left behind as it relates to the funding that gets here to Jacksonville. So Terrence, you have some observations on that.
Well, absolutely. And to your point on this topic, it reminds me of the conversation I was having with one of the city departments. And previously, I worked as a council assistant in District 3, which is that intercoastal area, Kernan, Atlantic, kind of a newer, more developed area of late.
And they have quite a bit of infrastructure.
And there's some infrastructure there. But the conversation kind of went because I was mentioning to them that I'd visited a home over in the district and went and saw the overgrown ditch behind the house, a city ditch. And right. And the overgrowth was enormous. And so I went back to the city and I mentioned that this elderly lady says that she doesn't feel safe. And in our conversation, what I gathered was that, you know, in District 3, when I would talk to residents, they would call that a preserve, a nature preserve, and the beauty of nature, and look at the birds, and look at the all these things that are of nature. And I shared with the city, but I said, when you come to District 10, that's no longer considered a nature preserve. That is a place that can hide some pretty bad actors. And if you're elderly coming to your house with that beside your fence, you know, you're not feeling safe. And public safety is up at the top of my list as well. And he looked at me and he said, you know what? You're right. And I said, this is what I guess fresh eyes coming in, seeing something and having that experience to make that correlation, to make that the jump. It's not a leap, to make the connection of this is what I experienced on both ends. And then I said, why? And there was no answer to the why. So I believe things like that are going to really bring a lot of light to situations that have existed for quite some time. And to your point with the disparity, I'm looking forward to jumping into these other conversations now. This has just been 2 weeks, and I feel like I've gotten some traction and some momentum.
Well, you've got some heavy lifting simply because of who you are.
Yes, sir, but I'm standing on the shoulders of some amazing people that have come before me, regardless of the – I like to say names like the Sheriff Glover and just hearing the story and having the opportunity to just sit up underneath him and listen, like folks like yourself that have taken time out over the years when I would just ask simple questions about – you know, how did we get here and where can we go from there? Sam Newby, Councilman Sam Newby, who is politically aligned with me, so as our political parties will say, but just understanding that there was a process he went through to get where he's at. I stand on those shoulders. And so although I've only been in Jacksonville since 1999, 20 years, mm-hmm. I wasn't born here. But, man, I feel like I'm gaining a wealth of knowledge each and every conversation I'm having.
So let me ask you quickly. About you mentioned Sam Newby, and the two of you are the two African American Republicans on the city council. How do you guys interrelate with the Democratic African American council members? Is there any synergy, or do you guys simply take the Republican playbook? Is this about working together?
Right, right. Is there a caucus, right? Is there a caucus?
Well, not a caucus. May be bad. I'm not saying it's a caucus. But how do you guys work together?
A fair question, and I can't speak for Sam, but I can tell you another stop along my way was working for the Chamber of Commerce.
Okay.
And I managed all of their political affairs. And so in doing it, that position was an apolitical position, which meant I had to basically represent the interest of the business community.
But the chamber is political now.
There's a political arm to it, absolutely. Yeah. And so, but in doing so, I had an opportunity to meet anyone who was running for office in this region, the seven county area, and develop relationships with them. And the one thing that I took away from it, Doc, I'll tell you this, and I used to tell it proudly to folks, was the confidence that I had that Jacksonville was heading in the right direction. Because there were so many people that were running for office that had great hearts and they had the love of people. And I said, you know what? They're going to do some great things. So to speak to the council now, having been a part of a lot of their journeys as they were getting there, just either through conversations and learning their hearts, to working in City Hall for 2 years and watching them work for the people behind the scenes, it's a partnership. You need 10 votes to get anything done up there. And I plan on being a part of those conversations to try to get things done for District 10. It's going to be great for District 10 and be good for the city of Jacksonville.
Okay.
All right. So just a plug for the upcoming segment, the third segment. We're going to have Sheriff Alfonso Williams from
Brook County, Georgia, and he's attending the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives in Hollywood, Florida, and their keynote speaker at the event is the director of the FBI, Christopher Wray. So that should be an interesting conference, and we'll look forward to hearing from him in the next segment. But parents, again, you know, we welcome you, and we also, you know, I've had the opportunity to work with you when you were an executive assistant over there, and your heart was always in the right place, and I hope that it and pray that it continues to be that way, and helping the folks in District 10, you know, achieve some of the things that they need infrastructure wise, and you know, eliminating some of that disparity there. Doc and I experience it every day, and we're working on it with the entrepreneur programs and other programs that are designed to help African-American and minority businesses become more successful. And congratulations, Doc. I know you are not going to say anything about it, but I
yes,
will.
Yes, I am.
The Jacksonville Urban League is the recipient of the, what is it, Doc? The
On next week, we have the National Urban League Conference up in Columbus, Ohio. We received word that the Urban League, the Jacksonville Urban League, will receive a major award for our entrepreneur program efforts. And while I'm speaking to that, I want to personally thank Thomas Waters, who is heading up that effort for us, and he's doing a great job in working with the National Urban League. We're hopeful that this will grow into something much larger, such that we can have the resources that we need to provide those services. We're going to take a break right now. This is Praise 107.9 FM.
Hey, everybody, get ready. It's an evening with the Power Up with Pastor Terry. This is your chance to not only listen to the Power Up, you can come be a part of the show.
Saturday, July 28th, the Power Up live on stage at Abyssinia Baptist Church featuring Corinne Harshaw.
Just like listening to the show on the radio, but only live on stage. So it'll be lots of live music featuring Corinne Harthorn and the Abyssinia Baptist Church Mass Choir and many more.
And just like when I go live on Facebook, y'all ask me all these questions and talk all the noise you want to, you can do that. And guess what? We will be giving away prizes all in one night.
We will be there, and we are inviting you. Tickets are only $15 and on sale right now at praise1079.com or at our studios in the Salem Center. So I trust him at all times.
You called out my name. Knew my past, covered my shame. This amazing grace you've shown, so patiently you've shown, so patiently, and you waited for me, just come on.
Yes. Where would I be? As a matter of fact, where would we be without the Lord on our side? This is Richard Danforth over here in the studio with my guest Terrence Williams, City Councilman Terrence Williams, and my co-host.
Terrence Freeman.
Terrence Freeman. Hey, I'm in the studio.
He's surrounded by Williams.
Larry Williams, I'm sorry, Larry and John. Oh my God, Sheriff Williams is coming on. That's okay. But anyway,
yeah, there you go.
Yeah, this is. Let me say, this is 107.9, and Terrence is going to leave us with some words here. Terrence, tell us.
Well, first of all, Doc and Larry and Jarman, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate an opportunity to just share what's important to me. But in closing, I want to just say this. It's about the people. For these last 2 weeks, everything's been about Terrence, and that's not the way it's supposed to be. We are in a position as council members to represent the residents and to serve them, and that's where my focus is going to be, and that's where it has been. Kids are the reason why I chose to come into this world of public policy, but having visited most of the senior centers in the last 2 weeks, quality of life shouldn't suffer when your working years are over either.
Right.
And so everyone is important to me, from these kids having safe spaces in the summer, safe spaces after school, to our seniors who are enjoying, you know, the final years of their lives. So thank you so much for our opportunity. Looking forward to working hard, working every day for this 10-month window to get things done in District 10. You guys have a great day, and God bless you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Terrence.
Thank you, Terrence.
Okay, we have Larry, you want to bring on the sheriff?
Yeah, sure. Hey, we have Sheriff Alfonso Williams of Burke County, Georgia. And Sheriff Williams is attending the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives in Hollywood, Florida. So good morning, Sheriff, and how are things going down in Hollywood?
Hey, good morning, Larry. Good morning, Doctor. Things are going well here in Hollywood, and we're here for the NOBLE conference, the 42nd annual conference. Glad to be here for this event. We'll have about 2,000 black law enforcement executives from around the world converging on Hollywood to learn about law enforcement and community partnerships and involvement. And this year's theme is unity and collaboration through law enforcement agencies and the communities we serve.
So, Sheriff, are these? I see where the director of the FBI is there. Is he keynote speaking today, or was he yesterday?
Yes, FBI Director Christopher Wray is going to speak, going to address the conference today, and we're looking forward to hearing what he has to say from a federal perspective on law enforcement and unity with our communities.
So are these just executives with the law enforcement?
These are mainly law enforcement executives from police agencies around the world. We'll have fairly decent representation from just all over the place. Folks come, and this event was in Atlanta last year. It was very successful. Looking forward to a successful meeting here in Hollywood. And we're going to be addressed not only by the FBI director, but there will be several congressional men and women who will speak later in the week. We'll have the chairman of the NAACP, the chairman of the 100 Black Men of America will be here, the president of the International Association of Chiefs of Police, who is Lou Dekmar out of Georgia, out of the Atlanta area, will also be here to address us. And they're going to talk about things like 21st century policing, which was spearheaded by President Obama. We're going to talk about use of force issues with police, criminal justice reform, school safety. There'll be a lot of workshops on youth leadership. So very much like what you guys had in Jacksonville a couple of months ago, except on a larger scale. But we're all talking about the same issues. We're concerned about police community relations in the country and finding ways to mitigate some of the issues that we face.
Now, you know, Sheriff, we here locally, we were supposed to roll out the body cams this summer, but our sheriff, Sheriff Williams, decided to defer that until the spring of next year. What are your thoughts on the body camera situation?
I got to tell you, Doctor, it's 2018. We've got to move to a position where we have every law enforcement officer armed with a body camera. We've got to do it if we expect to have trust between the community and the law enforcement community. We've got to do it to protect ourselves from false allegations. We've got to do it to get away from this he said, she said, and then you have a chief executive officer standing there saying, I don't know because I wasn't there. The camera doesn't tell everything. It doesn't show every angle, but it certainly helps to shed some light or offer some transparency into what's going on, and it makes the community feel safer knowing that there is some additional evidence out there, something other than he said, she said. And in 2018, it's a no-brainer. We've got to get past the cost. We've got to get past the fact that to house this information in the clouds costs us some money, but it's a very necessary tool, and every agency in the United States ought to have it.
So do you see police and community relations improving currently, or do you see those relations getting worse?
Well, I think it depends upon the area. In my area, in Burke County, Georgia, I think our police community relationships are improving because we're transparent, because we have those body cameras, because we're doing so many outreach initiatives. We're all about service in my area where I'm sheriff, and the Bible says that the Son of Man came not to be served but to serve, and we're there serving our community. Now, sometimes service is arresting folks. Sometimes it's understanding that you can't arrest your way out of crime, and you got to find other ways to mitigate problems that you have. But we have open dialogue. We have an open door policy. We have body cameras to say this is what happened, and folks know they have come to trust us and know that we're going to be open and above board and honest, and we're going to do what's right and what's fair. And so I think in some areas it's up to each of us as law enforcement executives to police ourselves and do what we know to be right and fair and above board. And if we each of us do that one by one, things will improve over time. But we're still in a very volatile situation. We're not close to having gotten over the negative aspects of this police community relationship, and so it's a work in progress. Every day we're working to make things better, and we've got to reach our youth. We've got to reach the community if we expect to see change.
And of course,
can I share?
Go ahead, John.
Yes, I had a question to Sheriff Williams on the topic of the use of force. You mentioned that is going to be a topic of discussion at the conference. With the use of force, you know, some residents would say even excessive force when it comes to the police. Are they looking to change policies or, you know, add additional training when it comes to the use of force?
That's a very good question. We're seeing a little bit of both. We're looking to change some policies, but we're looking for, we're also being faced with additional training. I know in Georgia they just tied some pay raises for state troopers to additional use of force training. And so now you're finding that we're not just teaching force. I've been a law enforcement instructor for about 25 years now. So we're not only teaching use of force, but we're teaching how to avoid those things, how to be proactive, how to keep from having to put your hands on people, to use your soft skills we have something that we call verbal judo, where we're teaching officers to use communication to avoid physical altercations. And so we're going to an approach that is less hands-on and more skills-oriented. And so a lot of that is happening. So you're seeing more training, but you're also seeing better training. And I say this all the time, and at Georgia, where I'm from, a barber, a cosmetologist, a licensed cosmetologist, has to have 1,500 hours to become certified in his or her field. In police work in Georgia, it's 400 hours. And I submit to you that that's just it's not equal.
It's not equal.
You have the authority to take a person's life, and you only have to have 400 hours of training to become a certified police officer. And I know in Florida it's more. You have to have a little more training than 400 hours. But we've got to push ourselves towards better training and better skilled people and better educated officers. We in Georgia, we're not required to have a college degree to be a police officer. Florida is kind of moving in that direction, where they at least require some college or an associate's. And we've got to, if we expect to become more professional and use less force and make better decisions, sometimes there's only a second or two to make those decisions. But if we're going to make better decisions, we got to do it through education.
Great. So we're going to take a quick break. This is 107.9, and when we return, we're going to talk some about law enforcement in the classrooms in our schools.
Yes.
The ultimate and also gospel experience. The new Praise 107.9.
Focus. Focus.
If I can stay focused, I know the end will be worth it. You call the shots, cause I'll drop the ball. If you don't control it, and if I can stay focused and concentrate on this moment, help me see clearly, yeah, this flesh isn't worth it. Hello world, what a beautiful day. Sunshine,
sunshine,
shining in my face. The new day.
Off
it'd be a little rain, but that's okay, and it's fine by me. I'll just take an umbrella, just in case. This world can be funny, always trying to get me. But if I can stay focused, I know the end will be worth it. You call the shots, I'll drop the ball if you don't control it. And if I can stay focused and concentrate on this moment, help me see clearly, yeah, this flesh isn't worth it. 2020, I wish I could see. Oh, so foggy, but that don't scare me. I know, yeah, what I want for me. I want the money, I want the cars, the clothes, and the woman. But you know what's best for me. Na 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 na. If I can stay focused, I know the end will be worth it. You call the shots, cause I'll drop the ball if you don't control it. And if I can stay focused.
Yes, yes, it's all worth it. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. This is Praise 107.9. This is Richard Danford here in the studio, and my co-hosts Larry out in Seattle, and Jarman in Birmingham, and we have a guest calling in from Hollywood. I believe it's, are you guys down at the Hard Rock Hotel, Cher?
We're at the Diplomat Resort and Spa.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, man.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I need a spa. I need some I need a massage.
You just came from a vacation somewhere in California.
I know.
I need some salmon croquettes. That's what I need. Hey,
this is the Entrepreneur Corner.
This Entrepreneur Corner. So we, for those of you who want to call in and shout out your business, you can do that at 296-2251. 296-2251. And, of course, we have a little place over in Arlington on University called Smoke in Town. A gentleman, he's doing a great job with that barbecue over there in front of JU. So if you're in the area, stop by. The greens are great. And the cabbages are real good. But before we left, Chef, we were talking about the fact that we're putting armed guards in the schools here in Florida. And we're having difficulty somewhat trying to find the numbers that we really need. This is a state law that we've got to put them into the school. So you have any thoughts on where we're headed with this and with the guns in the school?
I'm certainly a proponent, having been a former chief of police for the Richmond County, that's Augusta, Georgia school system. There's 65 or so schools there and 32,000 students. So a fairly decent sized agency. I am a proponent for having armed guards in our schools. We have come to a point in the country where we need that, and it's a very necessary tool. But the school has to utilize the school resource officer as a school resource officer. He's there to provide resources to help our children navigate the K-12 experience. So many administrators use school resource officers or school police officers as a person there to break up fights and that sort of thing. And we're there for much more than that. We're there to provide resources, to help students, to serve as an unofficial counselor, to help kids have a good school experience, to make the environment safe and conducive to learning. If teachers can teach, students can learn, they can sustain themselves, they'll live productive lives. And that's the thought behind it. Now, I am not a proponent for arming teachers. I think teachers have a different role. They have a more nurturing role. They have a bigger responsibility. To put a gun in a classroom and tell a teacher to use it it's just not what is best for our children. I completely disagree with that and don't think we should be going that route.
Okay, so but you are a proponent of having the safety officers in the school, but not arming the teachers.
Yes, we've come to a point where we've got to have officers in our schools, and we just have a lot of crazy people out there who have crazy ideas, and we have these folks who get their egos bruised, and they decide they're going to come into the building and hurt other people. We have teachers, staff, who may have domestic issues going on at home, and so some estranged husband or wife decides they're going to come into the school and hurt kids because of something going on in the community or in their homes. And so we need that protection.
And
students
so
deserve to be safe.
Parents right.
Send their kids to school to learn and not to be hurt.
And, John, you can speak to the mental health issues that we're experiencing here, all over America, but certainly here in our area.
Yes, mental health does play a part in some of the events that take place, or the tragedies with the children, but we believe that coming at children early, early intervention is a preventative measure for some of the thought processes that these children can have as they get older, some of their social emotional challenges that aren't taken care of early on. So just educating early and getting parents more involved and collaborating with teachers and making it more of a team effort in a positive manner, so that we don't have to continue with armed officers in the school system. I hope that's not something that we have to just continue indefinitely. I hope that there are more preventative measures that can take place so that we don't have to have officers in the school system indefinitely. Okay.
All right. Well, thanks, Sheriff, for Williams for coming on. We appreciate you. Always like to have you on, getting your voice of reason to law enforcement. And, have a good weekend. Enjoy the conference.
And get a massage for me.
And get two, and get one for me.
Okay, we're back. Yeah, I want to, man, it's good hearing from the sheriff, man. I tell you, he's a great guy, and, thank you, Larry, for the introduction, and we wish him the best in his, career.
He's a good guy, and, a homeboy, we Georgia guys are, we stick together, but, it's always good people, and you always try to surround yourself with good people who are successful in their fields of endeavor, so that's always good to hear from him.
Well, and I guess I can segue into the homicides here in Jacksonville. The homicide.
Do we have some homicides?
Well, the homicide tracker, as we know it over at the Times Union, is has been somewhat likened. So I was told to go to the JSO website, which I did. And if you pull up the sheriff's office website, you will you can find the number of murders, homicides in Jacksonville. Currently, they're showing that there have been 57 homicide. They have 8 pending classification, so that brings it up to 65. And then they have 5 additional non-murder homicides. They're trying to decide how to classify them, so which brings it up to 70. So this is the end of July, and ladies and gentlemen, we've had 70 homicides here in Jacksonville.
Wow, that's about
Right? Doc, did you assess whether that's higher than what it was last year, or?
We're running neck and neck with the stats from last year and the year before. I guess we have more people moving to town. We have, if you read the paper, unemployment is very, very low. They can't find workers for the jobs that they say are available, but we've got people running around town and they can't find a job. Maybe they don't have the skill sets. I don't know, Larry. Okay.
That's an interesting thought there, Doc, because I was thinking the exact same thing. I said, and people, they say they can't find people, but then we see people every day. I know if you go up to the Urban League and talk to Julia Wilson, Henry Wilson, she'll tell you that folks are always looking for jobs in the urban areas. So perhaps there is some need for something else to be done. But I know that across the United States that a lot of employers are relaxing some of their stringent qualifications and guidelines towards folks that, because they need the employees, they can't find them. And, with the immigration system, situation the way it's been, you don't have that influx of people coming in to fill those positions. So, the only thing I can say is, hey, get prepare yourself for employment, get out and find a job. Anyone that's not working right now, in my mind anyways, is not trying to work.
Well, sometimes it's a skill set issue. And sometimes it's they may have a criminal record, something in their background, which may preclude them from finding gainful employment. But still, there's no excuse to run out and get into the drug trafficking situation in order to meet your obligations, because they have something for you. It's called jail and prison.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
And
even with the schools, the lack of the skill set challenge, Dr. Danford, I mean, that can be resolved. There are programs, that you can gain skills. So there are opportunities out there to gain access to skills. So that shouldn't be a hindrance because there are a lot of jobs. Opportunities. I see locally that a company called SAFT America, they have an extension on their deadline to hire 279 employees. So SAFT America is hiring. They have until December 2019 due to some incentives that they received from the city council for hiring. So they're probably in a crunch to hire some people.
Yep, and I visited that plant. And, of course, the folk out there are highly skilled people. They're making batteries that are sold all over the world. You know, we're talking about the commercial batteries,
yes.
the very large ones. And we've got to find a way to improve the quality of life for people in underserved neighborhoods. You know, that's why it was important for Councilman Terrence Freeman to visit with us. It doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. You know, it's about getting the job done. And you know,
yeah,
we can talk and talk and crack and, you know, we've just got to come to grips with reality. We're in a very politicized environment, and especially now with all of the elections coming forward. So people are making promises and talking about the folk that haven't done anything. So, you know, I'm hoping. I don't live in District 10. I'm in District 1, and but I'm hopeful that the citizens will allow that that council member. It may not be their choice for now, you know, but they'll have an opportunity in the spring to make it known. But give the individual an opportunity to help the people right now. We need somebody that can just jump right in, bring the bacon home, do something positive rather than complaining all the time.
I agree with you,
yes.
Doc. And you know, it's time to, you know, from my perspective, I've never been, you know, party centered anyway. So I vote for people who have